Almighty and merciful God, from whom comes all counsel, wisdom, and understanding, we humbly ask you to guide and assist us in our deliberations and in our work. May all our efforts be directed to the welfare and good of our community and our country. May we act honorably in pursuit of true justice for all our people, now and for the future, and for generations still to come. Amen.
Meeting of Parliament, Friday, 20th of October 2017, order of proceedings. Confirmation of minutes. The minutes of the last meeting of Parliament, which was held on the 15th, 20th of September, and 10th of October 2017.
May I find the minutes correct?
Communications from the Chair, petitions, announcements, papers to debate, reports of committees, answers to all questions. We commence with question number 577 of 2017, the Honourable Ellis Yammer.
Mr. Speaker, can the Government provide an update on the land and its proposed future use?
Answer the Honourable the Deputy Chief Minister.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, the Government is currently in discussions with an interested party.
Can the Honourable Minister explain or expand a little bit further as to what the proposed usage the interested party would be proposing to develop the area?
The government is not able to do that at the moment because those discussions are ongoing. But its information will be made available public as soon as there is something concrete in the public. We don't have enough details really to be able to.
Question number 578, the Honourable D.A. Simpson.
Mr. Speaker, does the government intend to introduce legislation along the lines of the UK Dormant Bank and Building Society Accounts Act 2008?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Commerce.
Mr. Speaker, the government has no present intention to introduce such legislation.
Mr. Speaker, is the Minister aware that the lack of legislation in this area has created a problem for a number of banks, particularly in the sector that is going through some reorganization, with some banks taking over other banks? There have been banks that have also exited Gibraltar. And in the course of that activity, it has become clear that there are bank accounts going back sometimes decades, where they've not been able to trace the holder of the bank account, and therefore those banks are then left with a situation where they need to go to court in order to get direction from the court, and sometimes, for example, setting up trust. Now, let me explain to the Honourable, if I may, the indulgence of the Chair, by way of a practical example, the difficulty in this area. I mean, I've recently been involved in a case, and it's been made public, that's why I refer to it. I've recently been involved in a case where there are three bank accounts going back to the 1980s. The sums are relatively small, in total £115,000. The bank has been forced to go to court in order to obtain directions to set up a trust specifically in relation to these three bank accounts. Now, you may say, well, banks make a lot of money, therefore, what's the problem? But actually, the problem is this, that under the UK Act, that money would have been, for example, donated to charity. You could have had, yes. After a process, the money could be donated to, absolutely, after a process, the money is donated to charity. You can't locate these individuals, the advertising, etc. All that's been done by the bank, in my example. And then the cost, the legal cost, have been upwards of £60,000. There's a clause, well, before my honourable friend, Mr. Clinton, says £60,000, I've been involved in another case where a council has been charging £250,000 a week. So, but the problem is that the order, these types of orders include a clause, for example, where there is then clawback in favour of the bank if these individuals are not safe. So effectively, the bank comes out the winner at the end of the day. And I think that in this kind of situation, it would have been painless, it would have been far more efficient for the bank, just simply to go through the process that it has, and then to have donated the money to charity, rather than ending up in the pockets of lawyers and then through a clawback back in the pockets of the bank. And therefore, does the Honourable Minister agree with me that there are distinct advantages in having legislation of this kind here in Gibraltar, and that perhaps the government ought to consider it? Can I also say that I have drafted already a draft act based on the UK, and it is my intention to send a copy to the Honourable Gentleman, and then perhaps he can consider that legislation, because it really seems from the government's point of view, it's a legislation that will have a positive effect, very little downside indeed.
Mr. Speaker, the position as far as the government is concerned is that we are not aware of the problem. It hasn't been raised with government by either the Gibraltar Bank Association or indeed the Finance and the Council. It is an issue that has never arisen before. It's the first time I hear that the problem before us in Gibraltar. I think the difficulty with taking the process that the Honourable Member refers to, it is very easy to pass legislation, but it needs to be administered, managed, and adopted. Because the way that the system works in the United Kingdom is that there is a not-for-profit organisation which is in charge of receiving the money, managing the money, investing the money, and dealing with claims, because it's actually called reclaim funding, which was in 2014. And when you've got the amount of money that you're talking about in the United Kingdom, you may have sufficient critical amount of cash to be able to make that cost effective. But in Gibraltar, with the amount that the other members conceded are particularly small, the cost of setting up this machinery to manage these funds could put that beyond the risk of reasonable listing for themselves. And so the question is not that we don't want to do it, the question is one that we haven't had any approach from anyone in the private sector to do it, and secondly, from our limited understanding of it, the cost of setting this machinery up would well exceed the benefit that it would deliver. And I think these systems make sense, but a charitable donation, which is a little bit of a carrot, comes at the end of the rump. And even after the money's been taken into the reclaim fund limited, and it's still able to be called back should a family relative or somebody who really wants that money make a claim at some stage in the future. So it's not just as simple as receiving money, not open for 20 years, take it to the charitable fund and spend. There is a callback from the individual who may be related to the very original account holder that they had in open for 20 years. So it's actually quite complicated, and the extent of the work involved in doing this, in our view at this stage,
is if it is not worth pursuing at this stage. But I'd be very happy to hear from the honourable member and its story further.
Question number 579, the Honourable Elephant.
The Speaker, can the government provide a surplus of money to pension in regards to the new financial year, 2 days since December 2011?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Commerce.
Mr. Speaker, I'll answer this question together with question number 580 of 2017.
Question number 580, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a roadmap of which ESAT services are expected to be live and run?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Commerce.
Mr. Speaker, we are unable to accurately provide the study requested within the limited time because what constitutes e-government is extremely wide and could comprise software, hardware, websites, portals, design work, ICLD time, and technical consultants. For example, servers and hardware are essential elements of e-gov, but they have not been purchased specifically for e-gov, and the same applies to each of the other ones that I have detailed above. Speaker, with regards to question 580 of 2017, our plans for e-government are significant and exciting. They build on the successful introduction of the EID card in our first term, and perhaps one of the most ambitious projects to hit the public service in a generation. I could spend a significant amount of time just going over the different facets of the project. However, in general terms, we are focusing our efforts in two main areas, e-administration and e-services. Mr. Speaker, e-administration is about investing in technology and innovation to create better and more efficient systems at the workplace. Automating core business processes and repetitive tasks can then but can streamline procedures, minimize errors, and facilitate better use of existing resources. We are developing the following systems, which are all at different stages of implementation. Source to contract, or e-procurement, which is an advanced stage and we hope to complete by December of this year. Purchase to pay e-invoicing, which we hope to test and roll out by March of 2018. Enterprise resource planning, which is integrated finance, payroll and HR systems, which we begin to implement in January 2018 and complete the entire rollout within 18 months. The central database. Work has already commenced on the architecture and design, but we do not yet have an estimated implementation date, but certainly within the next 12 months. E-services are about bringing government services online. Government proposes to develop a new concept of e-services, which will make public information and government services available anytime, anywhere, to citizens, businesses, and officials alike. This is still work in progress, and I can say that we are working on two systems, which again are at different stages of implementation. The e-government portal and customer relationship management system. Mr. Speaker, I have given those at this stage the best estimates and the information available today that they may move hopefully forward.
Question number 581, the Honourable T.N. Hammond.
Speaker, is vehicle emission testing conducted as part of the MOT? And if so, how many vehicles have failed as part of the test since the 1st of January 2012?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Indeed, Mr. Speaker, vehicle emission testing is conducted as part of an MOT. This is a legal requirement. The DVLD has never kept statistics of specific vehicle failures as a result of mechanical faults or any other reason for failure. It would be available if asked to keep this sort of statistics requiring extra human resources.
Mr. Speaker, I've recently put two vehicles through the emergency testing requirements and neither was tested for its emissions. So I'm slightly baffled to understand that it's a legal requirement to take that testing. Unless I was very fortunate that it was unfortunate to be the only person not to receive testing. So could the Minister just clarify that every vehicle, regardless of its age, once it is subject to MOT testing, must be emission tested?
Mr. Speaker, that is in fact correct, whether the vehicle was not tested. I mean, I would need to have to check that. But it is a legal requirement, and all vehicles should be tested for emissions.
Question 582, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, can the government say whether there have been any unserviceabilities or failures of the electric car charging facilities at Midtown Car Park, and if so, how often and for how long?
On to the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the electric charging points at Midtown Car Park have not been commissioned yet. No interest has yet been shown. As part of the requirements of the STCP, and the environment, government is, however, currently planning and commissioning a few parking bays for this purpose in the very near future.
Mr. Speaker, I'm taken by surprise by the answer. My understanding was this was in order to, if the provision of such bays was to incentivize people to buy electric vehicles, in which case, if the facility isn't available, there is no incentive to buy, or there is less incentive to buy the electric vehicle. So surely, and my understanding was, the commissioning of this would take place with the opening of the car park, which has now been open for well over a year, and yet there is still no facility. When does government plan to introduce that facility, and will an announcement be made accordingly?
Mr. Speaker, as far as I'm being told, there has been no interest shown. It would seem an awful shame to have, I don't know, it was 15 or 20 pages of Africa dedicated to this purpose, have been empty and not used, and just waiting for electric vehicles to turn up. Therefore, this is the reason why they have not been commissioned. Now, as part of the original reply, we are now going to be commissioning just a few. And for this purpose, now again, based on the fact that our policy is that we want to incentivize people to buy them, but it's not for the reason, and people are not buying electric vehicles because there's no way to charge yet. That's not the case. It's not because Midtown has nothing to do with that. That's not the reason for it. So, as part of our policy, our environmental policy, and our STCP policy, we will not only be commissioning some of the electric points within the car park, a limited number that I've mentioned, but we're also looking at places on the public highway space to try to encourage this. Again, very limited amount of public space because we don't want to get rid of public spaces for the regular user. But that is the intention, and hence that is why we will be commissioning these quite soon. In fact, we are working together and working together with the Ministry for Environment on this purpose. The actual machines in this town, I mean, they are ready to go, the system is in place, and if anyone were to come in and request the facility, then this would have been all the preparation we've done earlier. And that in guarantee, and then remote gentlemen, but that is the reason why, and they will be rolled out very shortly.
Mr. Speaker, the real argument it arises out of the answer the Honourable Gentleman has provided. What he is saying, and I understand the dilemma that the government has, that if you're going to have 16 spaces at Midtown dedicated to electric cars, it's 16 spaces left for people to park. I have noticed in recent times that the top two floors in Midtown car park have not been open for public parking for some reason. Has that been a recent policy change? And I tell you why I'm asking the question, because in fact I park at Midtown car park, the public car park spaces, and in the morning, right up to 9:15, normally you can find parking in Midtown car park. I think that
wonderful resource. I have to say that to the minister. But over recent times, there has been a difficulty over the last week or so with the public car parking space as well. And I did notice for the very first time that the last two floors, there's a sign, a makeshift sign, that basically says that those are private car parking spaces. They're not marked in red as the ones below. And I just wondered whether there had been a change in policy in relation to those two floors. And if it changed, when did it change? These are the very first two floors, they are monthly rentals. And those are as a result of what used to be there before in slide 11. The cars are actually parked in that area when it was the old Mexico car park. So when the building began, the construction began, those cars were then moved on to into the ICC and then brought back to the top two floors of that parking area after monthly rentals, and that was and I've been doing like that for quite a while now. So that is the way that the sign, the makeshift sign, if there is a sign, there could be, because if cars have mistakenly made their way out there without reading the sign, and have parked in someone's private space, the rental space, and then you come along and want to use it, you're not able to because there's another vehicle in your space. So that's probably the reason why this makes the sense, because the signs are extremely clear. Now, obviously, it's extremely clear, and these signs should make things even clearer in that respect.
Question number 583, the Honourable T.M. Hughes.
Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the constituents, can the government question, can the minister say, if you would consider the placement of a loading and unloading bay in Balbeg Estate adjacent to Royal Sovereign House, where there are currently red lines painted, in order to allow residents, many of whom are pensioners, greater facility in getting their shopping to their homes?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the existing red lines were painted following the completion of the resurfacing works at Balbeg Estate as a result of representations received from the Tenants Association on behalf of garage owners that were then encountering problems entering and exiting their private garages. I am advising the Speaker that more recently the Tenants of the Estate approached the Traffic Commission directly, and as a result, a site meeting was held, including the chairman of the Traffic Commission and the highways engineer, to consider how loading and unloading bays could be demarcated in the area of Royal Sovereign House to serve the needs of residents. All requests for this station, Mr. Speaker, are assessed by the Traffic Commission, who then advise on the viability of any proposal. The Traffic Commission has now identified several different locations where they propose loading and loading bays could be demarcated in the future. The government would not have any objections to the provision of loading and unloading bays in this area, provided that the advice received is that this will be possible and not have a negative impact on garage owners, but the decision is one for the Traffic Commission.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Minister for his answer. To put this in context, I was actually invited to attend that particular sentence, and that took place nearly 18 months ago now. So I think the Minister will appreciate the frustration of some of the tenants who are waiting and waiting and are being frankly put off by the Traffic Commission. I would like to the Traffic Commission over a year ago, encouraging them also in the same direction. The response I got was that because the letter had come from the parliamentary letterhead, the matter is now political and I should refer it to the Minister, which is why I have raised this question. I am pleased to hear that there appears to be progress. But could I ask whether the Minister could look into the matter and just ensure that it is dealt with as expeditious a fashion as is possible from this point forward, bearing in mind the length of time that some of these residents have waited for an outcome for this particular case?
Mr. Speaker, they affect obviously the people who live there relatively quite a minor issue, which is one of them could have well, you know, to propose in a call to the perhaps
discussed, you know, where it was or whatever, and then I would have been able to give back to the push in the right direction. But having said that, it is not government's intention to make that difference for anyone, as you can understand. And the reason why these deadlines were placed originally was because cars in the school were unfortunately parked opposite the facilities. And why don't you use the vaccine way for them whatsoever? But as long as you are laughing and you want to take your car out, you can't. You have to have a 5-point turn to get out. There's always more like a moment people, you know, in terms of a place. And it's going to be a few minutes that might go down, but that can affect someone. And in fact, we had a complaint of someone who had a member of family who was very unwell, a permanent issue that person had. And they couldn't get out from the garage, get the person to make an appointment, and that was trouble. So that is why the Red Lines were placed to avoid this sort of thing from happening in the future. I was hoping to stand now that the other half of the coin says, well, how can I take my food home and sit down? That is obviously a thing that we live with in the day. We do want to get our cars as close to the place today, you know, as soon as possible, as quick as possible, convenience type of things. But obviously, we are looking at the reason why it's taken so long is because the car park is still there are allocated to individuals. And we obviously need to make sure that we don't affect, we're always moving from one part to the other, and just manage it, and that for us. But like I said, it's going to be a hard balance to find things. The base that we find could go too far away from each other. So it's not a thing that we get the base closer to this, but there are other blocks. We all also want the same thing. So it's a bit complicated that it's just because it's too hard to create each time different things. That's why I think we've been fasting on this for a bit later.
Mr. Speaker, again, I thank you for this comprehensive answer. And I fully understand why the lines were painted originally. The irony is now Garrison is actually taking advantage of the situation, because I've seen it for myself. And parking vehicles directly outside those areas is occupying an extra space, which sort of defeats the object and actually is unfortunate. And obviously creates further frustration for those who simply wish to have an unloading bay. And that is what we're speaking of. We're not talking about somewhere else, you know, hopefully people should be finding that they are if they park in the unloading bay and choose it as an overnight parking. But this is very much just for people to take their shopping or whatever other items out of their vehicle, somewhere closer to their house, as they bear in mind many are pensioners who may have parking spaces 100 or 200 metres away in the estate, and obviously that is undesirable. At present, the Red Line means no waiting, which means if you set at all, as you also know, it's a £100 fine, which is concerning for those residents. So if the minister can assure me so that I can go and assure the people who have approached me that the matter is being looked into as a matter of urgency, I will take that back to those residents and provide that assurance.
Mr. Speaker, the only thing I can see on the government is there is a procedure. There is a way of doing things. And via the traffic commission, which is the authority, which is making the decision. So obviously, that is in court. Touch upon a few things that you have mentioned. The red line is a red line for everyone, regardless of whether the red line is outside your garage and you own your garage and you wish to park outside your garage to trust your own garage. It's still an offence. The red line doesn't mean the event forever. It is something that is quite noisy to park and park your garage and you are closing up trucks and even if it is your own property. But that is obviously the service come around at that moment in time, they will be both because you can have people everywhere at the same time, and obviously many people in the majority will probably get away with it, let's be frank. £100 fine, yes, the traffic commission decided that should be the offence, because that would be incentivized people from doing that. Because if you say, well, it's just a regular SPM, and we're not maybe an individual court saying frequently, because you have to sleep from there all the time, then it's way worth the gamble, where you have £100 and you have a court once, and I'm never going to do that again. So that is the reason for that. But this is completely the certainty. Like, there is a commission that deals with these things, and I will see where that is. Obviously, they will come back and to me in a timely manner. I will inform. And we'll see what the report is.
Next question.
Question Question number 584, the Honourable Tian Hammond.
Can the government say whether there have been any unserviceabilities or failures of the speed cameras since their introduction? If so, how many and how long was it before repairs were effected? If those repairs were covered by warranty, and if not, what was the cost of the repairs?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
The speaker is addressing the question by the Honourable Member is provided in the segment that I will now hand over.
I give the Honourable question an opportunity to look at the schedule and you can ask supplementary later on in the service.
So, move on to question 585. Question number 585, the Honourable D.A. Keaton.
When will the government submit government projects for approval of the DPC rather than for advice and guidance?
Mr. the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, contrary to the advice received from members' offices who repeatedly urged us not to even submit government projects for guidance and advice, the new Town Planning Act, which is currently being drafted, requires government to obtain approval from the DPC and not just recommendations.
Well, that's certainly welcome news from this side, ignoring the bad comment that you made in to start with our
Mr. Speaker, can you give some kind of a timeline as to when that legislation will be completed and will be published?
Mr. Speaker, I've actually listened to two methods down to specific date clearly for other students. The final stages. It is in fact, I think the conference is virtually finished. But we are waiting a response from the government law offices on one aspect. And there are also a few minor amendments that would need to be made before it is finally ready. At the same time, we are also at the final stages of the drafting of regulations that will accompany this act. So I don't know, right, this is so late, I'm told, but then the word soon is the one that we debate about, but it will be soon. Question number 586, the Honourable Alice Young.
Since December 2011, Canada has provided schedules with details of how many planning applications to build private parking spaces or garages on private properties have been approved or refused, including A, the area in Gibraltar, B, the reason for approval or refusal, and C, the number of public parking lots.
Mr. the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, this is publicly available information.
Unfortunately, when you go on the government portal, even sometimes in the minutes, you don't actually get to see what parts of the application have been approved and which parts haven't. And that is the only reason why I brought this question to the House, because there are aspects of the application which get refused, but do not get recorded. Is there any way that the government could look into this and perhaps email it in the future, whether it's in the answer to this question?
He said the answer provided is what is available. It's actually public information. What is there is available for us to be able to, when you ask a question, when I'm going to ask a question, I ask my staff to listen for every time, and the reply is that. And what's available publicly is the information that we have to be able to give to the Honourable Member.
Question number 587, the Honourable Alice Young.
Mr. Speaker, since the ready bike training preparation, can the government provide a daily facility schedule for the number of users who use the service?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the first question by the Honourable Member is detailed in the schedule that I will now hand over. move on to the next question and we'll come back to the previous one as necessary.
Question number 588, the Honourable Eric Yemen.
Mr. Speaker, is the government carrying out year-round meetings in storm drills? If not, when was the last time they were surveyed and resolved their conditions?
Thank you, the Honourable the Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, yes, sir. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the Honourable Minister is aware, and I did say this question before we had this example together today. Within 20 minutes, many of the areas in Gibraltar started to flood. And so if you do take a walk around, you will see that many of the storm drains are actually clogged up with sand and dirt and sugar pipes and what have you. Clearly, many of them don't seem to have any maintenance in quite some time, years or God knows how long. Has an actual survey been carried out throughout the last year, or at least in the dry months, in order to prepare for the upcoming wet winter months?
Because this is done with by the team, there's a year-round maintenance of storm drains, the sewers and the culverts within the public highway, and this also includes the cleansing of road gullies. There's a regular inspection due to this, and they carry out by the infrastructure inspections of the service department. So, regardless of whether there is rain, quite aggressively for a certain time, and even with the best of drainage, there will always inevitably be some accumulation of water, especially at the beginning of the public. And recently, there is a very detailed maintenance scheme, and the work that actually are carried out is extremely expensive. Now, whether a particular drain has received an extra, that could happen, but the maintenance is then carried out on a routine basis.
I don't know whether it takes this, and it's a rise and consistent disrespect. I don't know whether the other gentleman what the feelings on the Spanish community has politics in the past days, the Spanish community is a compulsive view, not necessarily because of the meteorological occurrences. But you might have seen that in Perth and in Malaga, cars were floating in the streets. We live in a part of the world where it's such a privilege to live, but we suffer the same meteorological events as those towns around us. And although on particularly bad days, the rock acts like a storm culvert itself, and there's an area at the entrance of the main street that no government in our history has ever been able to deal with, other than perhaps bring about the conversion to a swimming pool between the month of November to February. We have never seen cars floating in the street in Gibraltar. Our systems, which are dated by Technical Services Department, and as one of the ministers said, ensure that we have the ability to get as much storm water out into the sea as possible so that those events do not occur. So, where we have perhaps a couple of inches of annoying water above the soles of our shoes, when the water is not moving as quickly as we would all like it to, in the towns next door, vehicles made of metal are floating because that level of water is falling. So, I do think we need to keep in perspective and understand the excellent job that has been done by the Technical Services Department to ensure that the water has the benefit that it has in such meteorological events.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful for the answer. I do understand, obviously, that we do deal relatively well in terms of flooding. I'm just saying that there could be more to mitigate because it's not an isolated storm drain in the south district or the north district. There seems to be many which would possibly prevent and report it better so that we'd never have to see those sort of things that we see on the front of the
Well,
I don't agree, because we have never seen those things in the data. That demonstrates that the work that has been done is the right way. A few cigarette butts in a few weeks do not mean that a joint is blocked. The first wave of the pandemic is completely deal with that. A passive system that speaks on the norms that's listed, it shouldn't be there, but it doesn't make for a blocked brain. And I think this is what is important, that we're putting into perspective where the issues in the data may be. We understand where we may be able to improve, but we don't denigrate that which is being done, which ensures that we don't have problems with that. So if our four motor brains were blocked, as one of the members is suggesting that they are, we would have those scenes. And not for those few centimeters of water sometimes at work, we would have cars floating on our feet, which is having we do not have interval, so we do not have rubbish things floating on our feet. I mean, when that did happen and we had a little bit of a few inches of rain accumulate, it has been for a short period as the water gets out through the storm drain, not because the storm drains are blocked, because the storm drains, which are relatively impossible to widen because they are laid when infrastructure is laid and roads are built and going into the upper town in particular and under Queensway would be in nothing is in engineering terms impossible, but almost impossible, just cannot take that amount of water in a moment. They can take it sometimes in 5 minutes, they can take it in 50 minutes, they don't really know. But Queensway, the Luton Batteries, even the area in front of the old ABN AMRO premises at the entrance to Main Street, still is flooded. It's flooded for minutes, not hours, as the water goes. That demonstrates that it's not a question of a blocked block, it's more a question of capacity and the impossibility of creating further capacity without major civil engineering works, which would make it very difficult to act without seriously disrupting the life of the city. And you have to put that in the balance of the context of a few minutes, you're on a very, 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 very rainy day of water moving, slightly more slowly than we might all like to see it moving. But it's not the upstream. The upstream would not be undone. And you could have an instance of a block drain. It's impossible to say that that is not the case. Despite the maintenance schedule that we ensure is presented with every year.
Indeed, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps I don't know whether the Honourable Chief Minister travelled, for example, just in neighbouring town of La Linea on Wednesday, and on the stretch of road towards Elyon, the entire area was in fact flooded because of the water, the rainwater that had actually fallen on that particular day. So, by way of supporting what the Honourable Gentleman has said, by clarity of reasoning, if our drains had been in exactly the same state as theirs, we would have had that kind of warfare in the street and it didn't happen in the book.
And if I may say, just the Honourable Gentleman has said, route indication towards that particular area of the flat of the river. You've also benefited from this beautiful, magnificent, monolithic rock that we all call home, which is in effect channels all water that falls in a particularly rainy day on the western side towards the flat. The area that we're on is completely flat. And most of the water that falls is just falling straight on the flat. We deal with the water that falls on the flat, namely Main Street, Queensway, the Luton Battery, etc. And with all of the water that falls on the rock, which comes with like a culvert down to the flat as well, and we deal with it much more efficiently than Honourable Member has rightly indicated is the case in the context of the neighbouring town. And not just the neighbouring town, which Honourable Member who has been recently described it as, as long suffering and lacking in investment. But even in capitals like Malaga and Jerez, they had to cancel operations in the hospital because the hospital was completely flooded. And they had to cancel all classes in school for the rest of the week. For the rest of the week. Now, it is right that we want to consider our nation operate at the best of the camp for the diversity right that we put in context a few centimetres of water. We had an instance last year where so many of us flooded through there that was there would never be so much rainfall in 24 hours. But within 24 hours, we were operating with two of them. That was an engineering error that appeared to have been made some time ago, literally a decade or so ago, when the new development was put up and the culvert was sent the wrong way. And in this particular occasion, when it rained so much, we found out where the culvert was pointing. So that was true. So we have to understand and put in context how we are dealing with these things. We are dealing with them very well, whether it is a problem, it is an ad hoc problem. It must be dealt with as soon as possible, but we mustn't allow them to fall into the kind of thinking that we have a major issue here. If the government could potentially have a look, for example, at the storm drains at the bottom of Bell Lane and Dublin Court, as you may see, it takes towards the north. And if those drains were to find the children and the believe it's still there, and the full of sand and dirt, it's not just that you see it's moist, you can see it's really, really dry, and it will take a little bit of manpower to unblock them. If that water is coming down from Castle Steps, which is notorious for its first rainfall, accumulation of water, comes down to Bell Lane. There's nothing there to collect to the block. And it goes into Main Street and doesn't cause it kind of space in Manchester. Then all that water does end up at the north end of Main Street, for example. And instead of having 5 inches of rain whilst the drains are at the northern end of Main Street try to manage the water that is falling in, you have 10 inches because there's so much water coming in from different directions and there's nothing to mitigate along the way. That's simply my question for the government.
Well, I think this question has been asked and answered by the answer of God. Because clearly, the question must have been filed before the rain. In good faith, no doubt, but the supplementary must have been filled up before the rain as well. Because we have the rain this week, the water came down from what is known as El Camino Real, in other words, it was itself a surf, the great culvert from the rock down to that point at the bottom of Dublin Court, except in Bell Lane, and there was not an accumulation of inches of water. There was not. And there was this is an infringement. Those same 20 minutes, those same 20 minutes, it was the same meteorological event. It passed here and went eastward, right? Caused the flooding and the closure of the hospital in the west. Now, what looks to him, or whoever it is who's working with these things, like a little bit of dry sand and a few bags, not an attractive sight, I mean, but I know that there is a photograph aircraft and photograph plane, so I didn't realize we were going to have a classic for the inside of rain. It's not an attractive sight, but 1 minute of rain kills it. And if that were not the case, we would have had a blockage, whether it was 1 minute, 5 minutes, or 20 minutes of rain. So I put it to him, Mr. Speaker, that if you go back and look at the drain which he's asked a supplementary about, and he might be satisfied to see that those presidents are dirty. Otherwise, Mr. Speaker, I was thinking that his next slogan should be Athena for Kuhra, because he might like to sit for a while and think of questions, but he doesn't follow up with the hard work of making sure that we're going to stand out his way.
Move on then from the rain in Spain or in Gibraltar to the next question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just go back to question 587 on everybody. Just looking at the figures, clearly August was a good month. The rest of the month around August seems to be fairly steady. Did government have in mind when they introduced the ready bike? Ready bike, what would constitute a successful or do they have in mind a target for the number of users on a given month? As you say, the figures are quite random. August definitely being a good month, which I presume is tourist, but obviously, I guess there's no way of knowing that. But around those months, there doesn't seem to be any kind of rise in use of the bike. Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, in my mind, any usage whatsoever is one surplus that's carried out by another means. I mean, Alice is working, clearly. And so we did not have any idea what we would expect in terms of numbers. But clearly, we are aiming at our aim and through the work that we're carrying out, our intention is to promote this means of transport, and we hope and expect more usage. We have, as the member is aware, clearly, and recently reviewed the prices of ready bikes. In case it was perhaps people needed that little bit of incentivization in terms of lower cost of usage. So what used to be a £2 daily fee has now become a £1 daily fee. But I think more than anything, I mean, the question of really encouraging the mode of transport and to encourage people to use it, and that's what we need to do. I don't think this is to do with price in that respect, because I don't think the reduction in prices had that effect on usage. Because, like I said, the month of August is a good month, and we can assume that there's more people that can across the border or in a few sort of services that may be using the bicycles more. But I'm very happy with the progress so far. Clearly, I'd like it to be much, much more. That is what it's all about. And our efforts now will be to try to encourage the use of bicycles. And in fact, tomorrow, the Ready Bikes will be on use for the presence of your event at Caithness, as well as in support of the charity. And they're also, the people that are going to use them with charity that people start using, more sustainable and more transport.
I certainly agree with the Minister that some people should be encouraged to use other means of transport. But it does concern me that the vaccine has been in place for coming up to 6 months now. There doesn't seem to be an upward trend in terms of the local usage. The figures for July are probably slightly better than the figures for September, in fact, which seem to amount to about 70 uses of bikes for the entire month. So, that's two bikes a day, considering the number of bikes available, that would seem to me to be a very small uptake from the community. And clearly that, to some extent, takes into account the reduction of price. As the Minister said, the reduction of price hasn't impacted. And it slightly goes back also to the question that was asked earlier, reference to the charging point. The government indicated it has a policy, but there is no demand. Are we in a position where we have, again, a policy that people are not being incentivized in a way that makes it a meaningful policy? And what does government plan to do further to further incentivize people, hopefully, to take to this mode of transport?
I think our general intent is to look at statistics. We're looking at the few by four statistics. I mean, I think we need to look at a much wider picture. If you look at statistics for the month of May and June, went up in June, so it was about 108 rentals in May, went up to 140 in June, went up to 154 in July, 407 in August, so there has been an increase in usage. Now, the first month has shown a decrease, but if you look at this month, which is October, it seems to be on the up again because we've got to look about midway, and it's got close to already reaching the full month of September. So then we have to look at such a short, small window. It's unfair. I think we need to have this analysis later on in the day, and once we see exactly what the full year of usage is, and maybe compare that in the future as well. But our aim is obviously, I myself am a cyclist, as you know. I see a lot more people out there cycling, a lot of people buying them. I mean, there's also the issue of bicycles being quite inexpensive as well. Because, they might try the way to say, well, I'm going to buy one now. And that again will have an effect. I think we need to look at this in a much, much broader way, not just the results of a few months.
Mr. Speaker, I do accept that point by the Minister. I think it is reasonable to wait longer, and we have limited statistics. So it was just, I was slightly disappointed by the numbers presented, which is why I asked, and the way the Minister answered the last question,
it sort of made me think maybe there is a target figure or something that you would like to see by after a year of use of the bike. You know, we've seen the figures rise and fall again, perhaps rising again. Can the minister confirm that there is no ballpark figure that they would like to see as a monthly usage for the bikes for them to consider the schemes they're going to put in?
Mr. Speaker, if they exist, we have no value. You know, your question is clear. I think we need to look at comparison. How many people were using bikes before? I think just to have, you know, a ballpark figure what we expect. I don't know what this is generally, so I think it's not really there is no hope or no, we didn't think down to a certain usage. The fact that we have 407 people using ready bikes in the month of August means that there were 407 people not getting other modes of transport. The bike, the taxi, the walking, walking even better, but a car, or private transport, etc. So again, it's very difficult to see where these originate from. Do people come in the car, private car, and then get a ready bike? Or do these people walk with the transport? Or do these people come off foot? Again, but there is no, I mean, obviously, I would like to see, this becoming a thing about that. I'm thinking possibly it will be, because I think it's true. The amount of people cycling nowadays compared to just, a short while ago. And then, even the amount of bikes that we see, the bicycle racks that we have in the place, the demand for bicycle racks is incredible recently. And still, we're struggling with 50% of our bikes, because we can't fit them. So, and I said earlier, it's the whole concept of cycling. The bike is just one of those vehicles. But this may encourage people to purchase bicycles, and I think that's also achieving that our aim is to do go down at each level.
Question number 589, the Honourable Ellis Young.
Mr. Speaker, since December 2011, can the government provide a monthly study of how many foreign licensed vehicles have been towed away for being parked in a public parking during restricted time, such as in the company?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the question requested by the Honourable Member is provided in the statement that I will now hand over. Could I ask the Honourable Minister, at his convenience, to provide an explanatory note to be included in the schedule as to what TCPA/TVLD stands for and GPNS. That is convenient, and then we incorporate it into the schedule. Okay?
Just to address a point, GPPA is the Goal to Car Parks Limited. Okay? The Goal to Car Parks Limited. DVLD is Department of Vehicle and Licensing, that's the MOT, what we call the MOT as the MOT. And GPNSL is the company that runs the Parking Enforcement, the Developer Parking Management Services Limited.
Obviously, we've seen a rise in 2017 of vehicles being sold. And I can talk from experience, having seen some vehicles sold the other day. And I actually asked one of the employees of one of these companies why they were throwing away in this space and the cleaning container for the cleaning center. I can understand if they were properly hosing down the area with water. But given that they were simply just swimming and passing vehicles around, which is not seen to do much in terms of cleaning the atmosphere, I couldn't understand why, apart from having to have the fixed penalty notice, these vehicles are being sold away. And Mr. Speaker, it was even local, they were being sold away while vehicles were now returning to pass in the area. And I asked, if the cleaning container has been finished, why are they still being sold away? And they weren't able to answer them, so they were very distressing. So I'm concerned that the fact that so many tourists are actually being towed away rather than just planned and made to pay the fee. Can the government enlighten me as to why
this policy is being implemented rather than just the planting of vehicles.
And Speaker, vehicles are towed away if they're causing obstruction to the public highway. If it's as a result of a street cleaning campaign, generally the principle is it SPN is safe and to be able to achieve that SPN to make sure that the vehicle doesn't go across the country and point in that respect, then a camp is safe and a camp has no society. The street being clear, that's the same policy that we used in the past. So, again, it's only if the vehicle is causing obstruction that the vehicle would be paid away. Other than that, it's a camp. But if it's a vehicle which is assumed it could be a derelict vehicle and it's not moving, then that could be another reason why a vehicle is paid away.
Unfortunately, what I have witnessed has not been as a result of derelict or causing an obstruction rather than impeding the cleaning strategy at certain areas. And at £50 a pop, I can understand that they would have to pay the £50 to notice. But to additionally burden and place tourists having to find where the vehicle has been towed to, rather than just simply placing the plant, as has always been the case. Can the government investigate at least as to whether this is simply a one-off or whether this is happening on a weekly basis and therefore this could seriously be impacting the serious experience of the voters?
Mr. Speaker, that we foresee the policy that cars should not be towed away unless the cause is back to the public highway. So I will obviously have a look at that. And see why. I mean, if it's only general, like to give me further details as to where it was, I can then. Of course, you need to give us a detail, but know where it was, and I love it, but it's not something that happens. Cars are only towed away when it's actually necessary that they are towed away. Otherwise, they are either an SPN is closed or a camp is closed to ensure that the SPN is closed. But otherwise, there's no point in it.
The Speaker shall gladly expand further behind the Speaker's chair, but I can assure the opposite side that I could have recorded the conversation I had with the MP when I said it, and they simply could not answer the question other than they were doing it just to make extra money.
Yeah, from the example, if I may say so, a ridiculous thing for an employee of a company that is not receiving remuneration based on how much money they make to give to the other government and for the other government to believe it. Because there is nothing about the people who are involved in parking management, nothing about their remuneration, there is no bonus structure, there is no remuneration to the company that is based on how much they fine or count or pay. So if you hold that, then you can have the presence of mind to say to them, well, it doesn't make any sense what you are saying to me. Or to record them as you suggested he would do to add to the telenovela that he's speaking on to on Facebook of his daily grind. Because nobody must listen to this debate and think that there is a policy on the part of the government of selling a car that is not causing an obstruction. Only cars that cause an obstruction will be taken. But I must tell him, as a pedestrian, Mr. Speaker, that he is absolutely right that cars that are causing an obstruction to be taken. Because I take a tram every morning when I walk to work, and it is disgraceful the number of vehicles which are foreign and locally registered that are illegally parked causing an obstruction, not just for other vehicles. Because let's not just look at the possibility of other vehicles being obstructed, but that pedestrians being obstructed. And that means people who are pushing trams, people who are on wheelchairs, and their ability to traverse the roads, and their ability to get into town. And because they must be the ones with standards. There's no question of this being done for the purposes of making money or raising funds or profit. And if he has been told that, Mr. Speaker, I would be very grateful indeed if he indicated to the Honourable Minister when he was told them at what time that we can determine who said it, so that we can put them down to rights, because that is not the policy of the government. And in fact, if it has happened, it has happened contrary to the policy of the government, which is entirely unacceptable to the government. Mr. Speaker,
more clarification. The Honourable Speaker is referring to the public highway, and I would like to support the government in the sense that obviously anybody who is accepting the public highway, the pavement and so forth, should be reprimanded regardless. So my question was specifically based on public funding. That is why there's a little bit of a confusion.
If I may just ask one supplementary speaker, I'd just like to say I do endorse regarding public highways where obstructions occur, that certainly the vehicles should be removed from causing that obstruction. I just wonder, and the Minister, I understand, I will come back with a question if he doesn't have an answer. There is a spike in the figures in for May 2017 of 101 vehicles being towed, which is about three times more than the monthly average. Is the Minister aware of any particular event or reason why the numbers are so high and not given right? And if I'll come back with a written question.
Mr. Speaker, there was a number of reasons why we saw a spike. In fact, there was a cleaning campaign was conducted at Western Beach, Bayside Road, and Grand Parade, and that was around 39 vehicles being towed away. Also, there were paint displayed areas. They actually in within residential space, general obstruction, and mainly red line. So, in summary, the main reason was cleaning campaigns. When there are cleaning campaigns, obviously, you will see an increase. There are various cleaning campaigns in a given month, and people leave their vehicles there, then obviously you will see a spike in that respect.
Question number 590, the Honourable Alex Yammer.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide an update to question 99 of 2017 relating to electric power boards and scooters?
On to the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, government continues to work with HM Cotton, the RGP, and the Gibraltar Law Offices in relation to the importation and use of hoverboards and other similar self-balancing devices.
Mr. Speaker, this talk with the law enforcement agencies has been ongoing for quite some time. And obviously, we're seeing an increase in further scooters and hoverboard, the electric hoverboard being used on our schools, buildings, without regulation. This was first decided by the government in December 2015, together with the drones. We've seen that the government is taking a far more serious approach to drones, given their importance. However, I would urge the government to look into this, especially when we know from the media that there can be issues of fire and safety with certain products which are not up to European standards, and therefore these could be being imported and end up causing a fire hazard in some of our buildings.
Mr. Speaker, the position under the law is that all these devices are illegal imports. So, the dispatching is also illegal, and the atmosphere vehicles, they're motor vehicles, the motor is an electric motor, but still, it is they should not be driven, they shouldn't be driven successfully, let them be driven on a public footpath or even on the public highway. And it's a matter of policing in that respect. And so, the legislation itself will see whether there is any use for the potential use for these vehicles as part of the growth. We were considering perhaps adding areas for it and considering whether something considered or possible toys more than motor cars. Some of these things really won't be able to work properly on the road because they're made for flat surfaces. And then those are also illegal imports. And those are generally the ones that have been accused of obstructing fire, the toy models. But the biggest issue I think we have with the legislation that these things are changing all the time.
what these are. And we saw in Dubai, the police testing a drone type motorcycle. And that things are even a bit worse if you can see down that line. But the way things are at the moment, because it is clear in the law that they are illegal on the highway, they should not be used.
Question number 591, the Honourable Tian Heng.
Mr. Speaker, regarding the transport arrangements in place for the GMS, can the Minister say if any vehicles were hired by government to support the event? If so, how many? And were the drivers themselves government drivers? And what was the cost?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, all vehicles were hired by government.
Question number 592, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Sport provide details of any vacancies which may currently exist to be within Gibraltar Sports and Leisure Authority?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, at present there is an administrative assistant, GSLA Grade 9, vacancy within the GSLA.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister clarify? I know in the past he's informed me that they were undergoing some type of staffing review and so on. Would the Minister like to enlighten us whether this position has not been advertised because of the still ongoing staff review, or has that now completed? And then it's just a question of starting the recruitment process to be initiated.
Mr. Speaker, the restructure has already taken place, which is most of the managerial and administrative part of the GSLA. This is a post that was left vacant at the end, because the GSLA infantry is one of the AAs at the bottom of the scale of the management. And therefore, this will, as I understand it, we're trying to recruit someone within the GSLA itself to see if there's anybody interested in getting that post. If not, it will just go through the normal procedure that we have done with the other person.
So, just for the benefit of the speaker, when the Minister says we're trying to recruit someone from within the GSLA, am I right in concluding that an internal advertisement of the vacancy which has happened and then subsequently to the interest very applicable person being identified, it will become public?
Yes, sir.
Question number 593, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Sport provide details of all payments made during this financial year in respect of any sports-related grants?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Sport, Culture, Heritage and Youth.
Mr. Speaker, I now hand over the Honourable Member opposite details of all payments that have been made towards sports grants during this financial year. I would like to inform the Honourable Member that this information is updated periodically online on the HM Government of Gibraltar Statistics website.
I'm grateful to the Speaker. Yes, the Minister has informed me in the past that some is available. On the Mr. Speaker, for the record, on the day that I had to sit down and prepare with notice, the government website to me was undergoing maintenance and therefore couldn't access any pieces whatsoever. Although I accepted the Minister, I wanted to also accept my inability to obtain that information as, you know, within the first week I was one might wish to submit questions.
Mr. Speaker, there's nothing much I can do with the IT department. We're actually doing a maintenance program. So all I'm just stating is that it is on the website and it isn't, and that was a given. It wasn't, there's not much I could do in that part.
Question number 594, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Culture provide details of all cultural grants awarded this current financial year?
answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
The Speaker, I now hand over the leading member opposite the information requested. I take this opportunity to remind the members opposite of the substated and posted on the recent government website with the proviso, unless it's going on the maintenance.
Okay. Question number 595, the Honourable A.J. Hayward.
Speaker, may I be, before I read that question 595, I know you will allow us to come back, can I ask a very quick question in respect of the schedule of 593, which was in respect of the fourth grant, fourth payment made. I see here, Mr. Speaker, on the second page of the schedule under the subheading of hosting a special sports and leisure event. There's an expenditure here for cleaning of Gibraltar Music Song Festival. Is that just a one-off payment or an additional payment despite some other grants that was made? I don't quite understand why the cleaning part one takes it to be post the event is specified here. Sometimes it's here for the ease of bookkeeping references with people like that, but it brings that question to mind. Is it an addition and supplementary funding or whatever?
Well, Peter, I will find out exactly why that is there, but I'm assuming, and therefore, but I will find out, I'm assuming that this is because the music song festival comes under the cultural day. And therefore, what has happened, I assume, is that there has been issues with how they leave the Preston Seminary Hall. And therefore, the DSLA has seen it fit to get it under event, albeit that they are not sporting events, but it is in the Preston Seminary Hall. But I will let the Honourable Member find out exactly why it's there. But I'm assuming that.
Yes, the Minister is right, and I accept that he needs to look into it. One of the reasons why I brought it up is you look at two or three lines further down, the cleaning or boxing event, and obviously boxing immediately, one can connect it with the sporting event, and automatically come to mind the use of the different cleaning hall, which is where I think the Minister and I are both agreeing. It's just the one festival did stand up in the whole fund. And perhaps the answer could be that it wasn't left clean to satisfactory standards, and in order not to delay other sporting events that have been allocated, you just bring in an external cleaning company and someone has to pay. But I can wait patiently, Mr. Speaker, and then the Minister can inform that he may want to look at as well the boxing just to double check on the event.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, probably the CEO would be what they call a JV, in which the account then is moved to our department team. He might have got the money back from there, and that's why it's in the list. And now he probably will claim the cultural side with 192 pounds. But I will say no. Thank you.
I just did it before one supplementary. The answer given by way of a hosting a special sports and leisure event is the World Pool and Snooker Championship of close to £250 million, on a different league to lots of the other grounds, for Rhode Island getting 98,000 views. I couldn't explain to the House or perhaps give an explanation whether that close to £250 million is purely cost or was there an element of prize money in that number? And if so, how much?
Mr. Speaker, these are two major events. It's not only one, it's two. The only thing is that the company that runs these events is the same one. So probably it's one payment for two events. So the honourable member could well split that into half, because I don't know whether the honourable member knows that this, the pool, for example, was live in Sky for 4 solid days. And that is why, and it would cost around half of that. The snooker is the same. So these have a lot of exposure for Gibraltar. This is a very important, they are very, very important tournaments. But they are being put together. And that's why if you are seeing it as a high expenditure. But if the honourable member looks at, for example, the dark trophy, with 133,000 there. These are, like I said, major events, very big events that are televised and have a lot of value. But and pool and snooker, I know that they are the same company, and therefore it might have been paid together. So that's what it is. But they are two separate tournaments.
And speaking of that, the Minister for Transportation, I have two further questions. It would become up to identify what company he's referring to, and also will he then expect that effectively the payment will cover any prize money paid out?
As you see, the money is there's a whole list of things that it covers. For example, I can let you remember now that when a snooker tournament is done here in Gibraltar, because to go down to the Centenary Hall, they bring all the tables, they bring up all the equipment, the cameras, everything comes from abroad to the Centenary. They take over the Centenary, they convert it into the tournament area, and that is all included in the prize, apart from many other things, like the prize money and many other things. The honourable member must understand that, like I said, it's got a lot of value to have these here. And like, for example, the dart, the value of the dart is that there are many people now coming to the business. It's events for tourism, while the snooker and the pool, the value is the television, the exposure in the television that there is. It's not so much, for example, not many people from UK come to a snooker tournament, but it has a value because snooker is on TV for about 4 solid days, many, many hours. It is worth millions in the exposure.
And the speaker, again, goes to the minister, but I didn't quite catch the name of the company that I worked with.
Mushroom Sports.
And the speaker says, still on. On the 593, the minister may not want an hour or may wish to inform us later on. Under the heading of hosting of special sports and leisure events, the fourth line down is the Commonwealth Games. Perhaps I am being over critical in analysis, but we've never hosted the Commonwealth Games in Gibraltar, so to have some clarification of, you know, why can it come under the heading of hosting?
Mr. Speaker, it is not the, well, it is the Commonwealth Games, but it is the Commonwealth Games Association who brought over all the executive committee to Gibraltar, and that is, it has been put as one of the events. So all the executives came here, they hosted meetings of the executives here, and therefore this is the expenditure. I think we had one reception and then somewhere else, so basically some expenditure, which is 5,321, was the Gibraltar Commonwealth Games Association applied to us to host this meeting.
So this is the one that would be correct for me to, if I were to amend this, to either the Gibraltar Commonwealth Association or hosting a meeting or something. Just for any future reference, I know what can happen with people that come back the time without them looking back at some notes and then I'm not clear, you know, on the actual meaning of the Congo game.
Yes, I will be.
Question 595, the Honourable E.J. Harris.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister for Sport inform this House in respect of the government's plans for the possible relocation of the seating facilities presently cited at the River Post?
Honourable, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the government is working very closely with the Gibraltar Private Seating Association to relocate the association to adequate premises. An announcement will be made once the necessary plans have been finalized.
Mr. Speaker, is the Minister in a position to at least identify possible areas that are being looked at? Can you confirm as well that unfortunately, in trying to identify a location, there is a stipulation from the international regulation that these seating ranges should now be sited to the north-south facing, as opposed to the non-restriction before where we ended up with an east-west. Because that could enlighten of the situation of why some areas cannot be looked into as a field.
Mr. Speaker, I tell the Honourable Member, this has been a very, very challenging exercise to try and relocate the Gibraltar Private Seating Association. And it is to do precisely about what the Honourable Member is saying. Because not only has it got to be facing south and north, it has to be seated on the south, seating towards the north, and imagining Gibraltar, but it has to be 30 by 70 meters, and therefore it's been a big, massive challenge. And we've had many areas where we've tried, we've looked at this, we say, right, okay, there's 70 by 30 here. Oh, but no, it's not facing north side. So it's been very, very, very challenging to try and find an area. We have identified a few, we've gone through planning, and then we tried to come back because it's not quite exactly what their needs are. We are confident that working closely with them, as we question the answer to the question, that we will get there and an announcement will be made very soon.
Do you not need to confirm that, or the supervisor now, that they are still seriously considering the top of mid-time car park for cycling the train?
No, sir. Question number 596, the Honourable Alex Yama.
Mr. Speaker, is the government able to explain why the DFA and government have yet not agreed on the sale of the Victoria Stadium?
Also, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the Haitian government and the DFA are finalising these negotiations in respect of the sale of the Victoria Stadium.
Question number 597, the Honourable Alex Yannis.
Mr. Speaker, is the government confident that it will be able to build the sporting facilities in time for the Island Games without the need to use taxpayers' money as stated in their announcement?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, yes, sir.
Question 598, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, are any improvement works planned to remedy the poor state that Campbell currently finds itself in?
Honourable, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, as in previous years, the legal work of Campbell and all other public features will be carried out prior to the 2018 official bathing season, addressing all problem areas and making these good in the best possible way. Further to this, extensive repairs and maintenance work will be carried out at the Camp Bay pool and its pumping, filtration and chlorination system. These works are scheduled to commence by the end of this month, and once concluded, the pools will be covered and prepared for the winter. A fully comprehensive resurfacing and refurbishment program for the entire Camp Bay area is also being currently considered by government, However, given the magnitude of the work required, work would probably have to be staggered over a period of at least 2 years.
I fully appreciate that the degree of routine maintenance and work that must take place. The reason I raised Kent-based specifically is because A, concerns have been raised to me directly about its condition, and B, because it's one of the areas that isn't just used in the summer. Of course, there are playgrounds where people take their children there to ride them on their bicycles, and all sorts of other activities that take place there throughout the winter as well, which is why the concern is specifically raised about Kent-Vale. I fully understand the bathing season and its accessibility to the other sandy beaches, but perhaps would government consider bringing work forward to at least make the area first and foremost safe, but also user-friendly to the users of Kent-Vale over the winter months.
But it's precisely because the area is used regularly throughout the year that we will have to stagger it, because clearly we have to carry out any major work in the winter months, because at that time you could perhaps section off areas, whereas in the summer, because of the massive use, it would be less likely that that would affect it. As I say, we are looking at a comprehensive refurbishment, and I am hopeful that we will be able to make some improvements before, certainly before next summer. As to whether we will be able to do anything major, the thing is that obviously we are putting resources into the pools. The pools were in need of comprehensive restoration of pumping, filtration and chlorination equipment, and at the moment we're concentrating on that, which has to be carried out clearly in the winter months.
Question number 599, the Honourable E.J. Harris.
And Speaker, can government provide details of what measures it intends to introduce in order to contain the ever increasing problems of apes roaming around the Laguna estate area, around the area of Laguna estate?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the recent arrival of a group of barbary macaques in the area, which includes Laguna Estate, is due to a splinter group from Rock Gun being pushed down by another group, and this is part of macaque behavior. Once at the base of the cliff, the group has been captured by food being provided in the area near Eaton Park. Steps have been taken to stop this. In addition, as part of a multifaceted approach, the macaque management team is being deployed on a daily basis to the poor Laguna Estate and push the macaques back into the nature reserve. Further to this, all the macaques that have been in Laguna Estate recently are being carefully assessed by the management team and selected individuals sterilized.
I am most grateful to the speaker that the minister has a decent informed us that the control team is there. So I don't think I need to stress, but I want to put on the record the great concern that seems to be expressed by residents there. There are all sorts of reports of, unfortunately, the macaques going to people's homes, as nature incites them to eat the foods, they seem to know their way into kitchens, people with parents with young children. I'm particularly worried on this issue. I have no doubt that the team is going there on a daily basis. Could I urge the minister and plea on behalf of these residents of Laguna Estate, if possible, to try and extend the number of hours that they attend daily, or at least they twice a day, because we can comply with the letter of the law by saying I'll be there on a daily basis. But folks there say you go at 9 o'clock and go by, and by 4 o'clock, 9 there seems to be a difficult party going on in most of our capital states.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to my friend, the Honourable Mr. Reyes, for reminding me of the problem that macaques can create in urban areas. He didn't need to do that, because I spent the first 2 years of my time as minister trying to resolve the problem that I inherited of macaques all over the place.
So I'm familiar with that. We have been successful in the last two or three years. The incidents of Macap in urban areas, which will always happen as long as we have them in the Volga, is greatly reduced. There is this problem of a splinter group of about 10 to 12 that was forced down due to their own internal aggression between groups. And certainly we are there as much as we can. And it doesn't necessarily have to be at a particular time because they do move around the area. But I'm quite confident the way that we're dealing with this, that within the next few weeks, you know, the incidences of these monkeys within Laguna State will be greatly reduced. It's something we have to be monitoring constantly because, as we often said here, these monkeys are free to roam, and long may they be there. But obviously, we're doing all that we can to keep them away. And I think we've considerable success in the last couple of years, but I've never said that we could guarantee 100% that the odd group won't appear in the area. The problem was that when people who were using Eastern Car Park or the East Car Park below Eastern Park saw them here, they started feeding them, and we had to send our litter wardens to ensure that that stopped. But obviously they already were comfortable in the area, and we had to then deploy people to move them out. But as I say, I'm fairly confident that the problem will not be long lasting.
Let's figure this one question in relation to this point. The Minister has spoken about a multifaceted, more flexible approach. Can you confirm what measures are employed by that multifaceted approach?
Well, the deployment of staff to control the feeding, that's one that I've already mentioned, the litter warden. Ensuring that bin stores and so on are properly closed. Being present to chase them up whenever they're in the area. And the assessment of the individuals so that we can see which one. Which are the females, and in the case of a group that you want to move away completely, it will be the majority of the females should have contraceptive implants or should be sterilized in order that the group doesn't increase in size, because that would mean that we'd have a larger problem in the future if they were to be placed down again. So that's four or five different aspects which is part of this multiple approach that I refer to.
Is relocation also considered in relation to the Bobby attack? And there's also just one further question to add to that. Are little wardens also trained to deal with Bobby attack?
The little wardens aren't dealing with an attack. The little wardens are dealing with the people who are feeding them attack. So they are telling people, don't feed them, don't attack them, and if you do it again, we can find you. Which they could do, and they want, but we try to persuade and encourage people to do that. And the relocation, yes, ideally. I would, and we're still trying to find other locations outside the group where we could send a group, but relocation from a point of view of trapping them and moving into the upper rock is a strategy that has been used before, which we still try with limited access because it's a couple of 100 meters down a cliff for a monkey is nothing. But certainly, we do try that as well.
Question number 600, the Honourable E.J. Hale.
Can the Minister for Education provide details with respect to the locations and sizes of the new schools that have announced will be built on the refurbished?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the details for this project will shortly be presented to the public, and so then it is premature to make any peaceful statements.
Mr. Speaker, can I possibly have an indication of how long the story would be? There are one knows whether there's a question that I should pose for the November meeting.
Within the next 2 weeks?
Question number 601, the Honourable E. Gayhurst.
Can the Minister for Education provide details of the total number of students stroke pupils currently registered per school or educational establishment, broken down by individual schools, school year, and gender?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change, and Education.
As you think of information, the question is set out in the schedule which I handed over for the Honourable Member's attention. This information represents the student population for this academic year.
Question number 620, the Honourable D.A. Seaton. Sorry, I beg your pardon, 602. Thank you very much. Mr. Speaker, further to answers provided to question 122, can the government please provide details of the cost of courses which were moved from applications for discretionary awards to applications for mandatory awards? Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, the information requested is set out in the next schedule which I hand over for the Honourable Member's attention. This is a list in respect of the cost of discretionary awards converted to mandatory awards in 2016 and 2017.
Question number 602, the Honourable D.A. Seaton. Further to the answer provided to question 122, can the government please provide details of the courses relating to each entry on the schedule available in the record? Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, there's a mention of the question that's set out in the next schedule. The Honourable Member will be receiving both together. The schedule available in the records has now been updated to provide course details.
Question number 604, the Honourable D.A. Seaton. Mr. Speaker, further to the answer to question 120 of 2017, can the government please state what plans it has for those parts of the Moores Castle complex which formerly formed part of Her Majesty's prison and or are currently not open to the public, and what progress has the government made with those plans? Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
The Speaker, the area of the Moores Castle complex that formerly formed part of Oakham Prison is in itself made up of distinct areas with different potential, so I will deal with them separately. All areas in the complex have been cleared and as best was removed, and this allowed the surveys of the area to be carried out. The area containing the old dungeons and galleries is currently being considered as an extension to the tourist product. Feasibility studies have been carried out, but it's important that before decisions are taken on its use, the guarantee of throughput of tourist visitors is secured, as the site would require a substantial investment, and the current plan is for few visitors to stop at the Moores Castle complex, as they tend to prioritize in microscale the Great Beach Tunnel and tunnels and eight dams. We're also looking at using the link as a throughput for the northern defences. This ensuring the sustainability of both areas and further enhancing the Baltic tourist offering. With regard to those old accommodation, mess halls and common areas, no decisions have been taken on their use, but one of the possibilities is as part of the World Heritage Gorham Cave Complex Research Facility and accommodation for visiting archaeological teams. Government will provide further information as decisions are taken.
Mr. Speaker, just in relation to this latter part, and bearing in mind that the Moores Castle complex, and I include everything within that,
is a wonderful, wonderful resource and a wonderful, potentially a wonderful tool for tracking those parts that are not open to the public. Can the government at least give a commitment that, in principle, there will be a presumption that all the areas within the North Carthage complex will be made open to the public, at least in some months of the year, and that we will not have a situation where parts of that complex are just going to be private for visiting professors and outside the water. As indeed there are other potential tourist attractions where unfortunately are closed because of use in that respect.
This is just a possibility, and that would be for short periods. Different areas of the Carthage complex would be suitable for different things, and perhaps not all of them would be suitable for people to access on a regular basis. Certainly, the possibility of periodic opening so that people can perhaps on an accompanied basis, as it is done with the Northern Defences before the work, during the course of the work that are currently still ongoing, is a possibility that I think is worth exploring.
And is the government also considering retaining, for example, some of the cells that were formerly used by prisoners of Her Majesty's prison, which potentially is also a tourist attraction in itself, because it shows how the complex itself has been used over the ages. I myself visited when I was Minister for Justice the complex. In fact, I visited when it had prisoners, and I found it absolutely fascinating how prisoners were actually kept in the new castles. Not in the best of conditions, I have to say, before we decided to build a new prison at Windmill Hill, but it is part of the history of Gibraltar, and certainly wearing my historian hat on, I would think that it would be a matter of significant interest to tourists as well to see how prisoners basically lived during what was a very large period of time that this complex was used as a prison.
I think I'm sure that can be considered.
Before we commence the next question, and whenever you consider appropriate, can I ask the supplementary in reference to question 603, please? Thank you, Peter.
Can I ask for some clarification from the Minister for Education? I see that in the details provided in the study relating the parts to year 2016, I noted here that areas of grant in respect of PGC, that is postgraduate certificate of education, are recorded as mandatory. In 2017, the same thing, they're recorded as mandatory, except for application number 30. There's regret. I interpret the word regret to mean unsuccessful. But if they are mandatory, as in the schedule, so for the previous year and for the 16 year and 17 year, how can this then be a regret if they were mandatory unless there's some other information that is qualified? I don't know specifically. I would have to look into that. But the report was not mandatory. Or there was some other problem specific to that particular applicant that I would consider suspect. And I'm happy to do that and provide that information.
The Minister said, because it, unless it is that PGCs are not mandatory, I'm not trying to cut them out, I'm just trying to be able to clear our PGC is now mandatory.
It may be that the applicant would not fall into the category of mandatory, but wants to go to GDC
maybe more years after a first degree than would normally be the case, in which case those would be would not be mandatory. So there may be an exception to that particular applicant who may have wanted to do, as I say, the teaching or maybe the subject, because I don't know the detail. I can see a couple of scenarios where that could be possible. But without looking into the specifics of the case, I cannot assist, and I undertake to do so.
As in the speaker, that we have referred to you as the speaker, that you know, the minister, no doubt, will look into it as soon as possible. If he has an answer and is able to present it through you, through the speaker, during the course of this current meeting of parliament, then he calls an answer. Sometimes, in the different sense of the words, the minister provides maybe in a private basis information, and then he's not to call this answer. So, are you in agreement with the speaker so that if he does have the answer before we adjourn to the idea, that he's then presented to the chair so that it becomes.
Yes, if he can, it is obviously not a problem at all. I cannot help but comment, but really, I don't know any members of the opposition can expect the minister to come to this house with detailed information about hundreds, recently hundreds, of scholarship awards. That is unrealistic, and honourable members of the opposition should bear that in mind. It is unrealistic for the minister to come with that information available, which is not in his domain in any case.
So, I certainly agree. I do not have any.
Now, there is specific information that he doesn't have, which he can and intend to make available to you. If he's able to make it available during the course of this meeting, I do not mind, under the rules, allowing for him to do so. That is not a problem.
Okay, Mr. Speaker, we're now both saying it in the same hemisphere. Thank you.
Question number 605.
He's lucky not to have the answer to this question. It's a long figure, but perhaps just on the off chance that he might, and if he doesn't, I will look at it and ask a written question rather than an oral question next time. But what I do see is, for example, there are a number of entries in my area, which is law, which are discretionary grants, and received in 2015 at item 7, received at item 12, there is an item 10 over the page, again at item 3 in 2014, 15. Now, my understanding is that if you do a degree, a primary degree in law, and you choose to do a master's in law related, that would be mandatory. Does he have any information as to what this might relate to? Is it the conversion course from a primary degree, let's say, in geography, and they choose to convert them to law?
There are various possibilities there. If you speak again, without the specific people, I'm grateful to you, Mr. Speaker, for your understanding of the fact that I try to memorize them, but it's impossible to remember all the cases. And there are a couple of scenarios. It could be a conversion from one course to the other, which would need the approval of the department for obvious reasons. The other thing is that postgraduate degrees and postgraduate courses are the rule, are mandatory, and the rule of thumb is within 2 years of the first degree. After 2 years, then they do go through a process of assessment. So if somebody, as I say, wants to do a postgraduate degree, not just in law, but in general, of a subject more than 2 years after they completed the first one, then that is not necessarily given or can actually seem to be given. That's maybe 3 years and not 10. But somebody coming back maybe 10, even 15 years afterwards, they would go through the selection procedure. But again, I'm happy to refer this back to the team in the department to give me more questions in order to be able to look at those specifics.
I'd appreciate it, and perhaps there's no need for a question if the honourable gentleman can perhaps phone me at some stage and let me know.
The reason why I ask is because there have been parents in the past that have come to me. In fact, last year I had a number of parents that were telling me that the government wasn't funding the conversion course from a graduate to law, which is a year's course, which in fact has always been discretionary, even in our time, and it may well be that even in our time when the DOD was in office, that there was a change in policy, and in fact a much more stringent look at those kinds of cases because of the amount of laws that we have in Gibraltar. But definitely I have come across it, and there have been representations that have been made to me. So if the Honourable Gentleman can look at that, I appreciate it.
Question number 605, the Honourable Ellis Yaman.
Mr. Speaker, will the government be looking to tackle the irresponsible littering on our streets or chewing gum and cigarette pipes if so happens?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, littering is an offence, and throwing and chewing gum and cigarette pipes in the streets are no exception. Creating awareness and where the perpetrators can be identified, enforcement of the law will continue. I want to add that this thing shows a disgusting lack of civic pride. It's imperative that every member of our community pulls their weight and ensures that they do not litter. We must do better as a nation with all aspects of litter and waste, and that means primarily rediscovering our civic pride. The government roundly condemns all those who litter, all those who do not clean up after the dog, and all those who fight it. As a community, we must mature into extending the pride we have for the inside of our homes, equally to the common areas of the small but great nation we call home. And that is the only long-term solution and the only way to really help the employees of Martha Torres, who do such a good job as the Chief Minister, I, and all the governments reflected in our motion last week.
I couldn't agree more with the comments made by the Honourable Minister. But could he perhaps, or the government perhaps, consider encouraging people and perhaps legislating, for example, the people who are chewing gum or smoking on our streets to carry portable disposables to then deposit them rather than be allowed to throw them in the street, and obviously it's very difficult to control. You can't control them absolutely everybody. But if at least the person who is smoking is asked whether they have a portable disposable ashtray with them, then at least maybe that could be a potential idea for the kind of system to them.
This is something we should all encourage. Whether we should pass a law that makes it an offence not to carry something like this is something that should be the subject of a larger debate. But it's something we should all encourage, and it's not just something that the government should do, but each of us as individuals, the people who we know, who do litter and who drop the cigarette butts and the chewing and so on, we should make sure that that is not acceptable as well. And it's something that clearly we will continue to do.
Question number 606, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government explain what the plans are for the plot of land by the lighthouse as we have reported and the estimated cost involved?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, there will be a landscape public area which will hold interpretation relevant to the World Heritage Site as well as benches and paths. As an open area, it will allow spectacular views of the state and will be enjoyed by residents and tourists alike. The cost is estimated at £42,000.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Honourable Minister for the response, and especially that progress is being made to beautify the area, which was in very much need of a little bit of CO2.
Does that mean then that the government has abandoned the expression of interest that it invited for in the community and would now pursue this event instead?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, the government took a view that considering the construction, albeit low scale and low level construction, that was going to be in the Europa Point area towards the west with a new sporting facility, that we took the view that in order to maintain the open space at Europa Point, which had been the subject of a lot of public engagement during the time of the former stadium proposal by the GFA, and that we would like to keep this area open and available to the public. So the government took the view that we would not progress on that and instead open up landscapes and use the bunker at the moment as an area where we will be placing interpretation panels in relation to the area and to the World Heritage Site, and we feel that we're giving this back to the people of an open area.
Question number 607, the Honourable Eric Lennon.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a schedule of how much has been paid to each entity since December 2011 in relation to the maintenance of the voted green and planted public areas?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I will answer this question together with question 608.
Question number 608, the Honourable Eric Lennon.
Mr. Speaker, what contract exists between government and entities for the maintenance of green and planted areas, public areas in the water, including the Upper West Military Reserve?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, information requested by the Honourable Members and the settlers which I now hand over. And in relation to the second question, this is for planted areas excluding the Upper Rock, as no contract exists for the maintenance of the Upper Rock other than some aspect of cleaning, which is part of the overall cleaning contract that has now gone to tender. If I may just explain, the work in the Upper Rock is carried out by a team that is directly under the Department of the Environment and is not a contracted service.
Question number 609, the Honourable Eric Lennon.
Before I pass into instruction, when the other minister has answered his question on 608 and referred to entity A, B, and C, will the government be able to disclose the names of these entities?
Mr. Speaker, it's normal practice when we are asked, and certainly I've done this before, in relation to questions to do with the Upper Rock and people owning money and so on, it is normal practice not to identify the companies. I have no problem in doing that behind your chair, Mr. Speaker. Let me just go with my own clarification saying that entity A, B, and C are the same entity A, B, and C in the two schedules. It's not two different entities A, B, and C. So it's the same company. That identify the entities A, B, and C in each of the schedules. But at this point in time, and without notice to them, I would rather not mention them by name. But
there's no question, Mr. Speaker, the government disclosing the identity of a debtor to the government across the floor of the House. I thought it was with the debtors, the question.
And I just to clarify, Mr. Speaker, the debtors are the subject of another question where we haven't identified. We have. I'm sorry that if I misled the House. It wasn't intentional. It was just by way of example. So that is the reason. Perhaps we should do that. I would be more comfortable if I didn't, but for no reason other than their own privacy, not having consulted them as to whether they particularly want this done, but it's not the speaker that I'm willing to say.
Question number 609, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government state since October 2016 which states for the Ohio statute being open to the general public?
answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
The Speaker will answer this question together with question 610.
Question number 610, the Honourable Ella Fiona.
Mr. Speaker, can the government update this house as to when the expected opening date for Mount Smithers glass lookout is and why the delay of over a year in opening?
Question number 610, the Honourable, answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, in answer to question 609, every day except 26th December and 1st of January, and to 610, the Mount Misery Glass Lookout, known as the Skywalk, will open this year. The delay has been last year attributable to the fact that additional work that has to be carried out in the vicinity of the Skywalk in order to make the area safe for visitors.
Mr. Speaker, with regards to O'Hara's factory, again, I don't pass very often, but I am told, other than that I do pass today, that the gates do remain closed for pretty much since October last year. And especially the exhibition, I don't believe has ever been opened. And with regards to 6 with regards to the Mount Misery, does the Honourable Minister have an estimated date of when it will open in the next coming month?
Mr. Speaker, in relation to O'Hara's battery, I am surprised that we have found the gate closed. The information that I have is that it has only closed in December and January. The exhibition specifically, I would have to inquire as to that, but the question related to O'Hara's battery is a battery, and that's the answer that I have prepared. In regards to the glass lookout, the problem there was that in assessing the surrounding area, which includes Douglas Park and some of the roadway in that area with an expected increased throughput, there were concerns expressed as to the safety of the path, and we have had to carry out work which have meant putting some banishment on just to ensure, without spoiling the natural look of the area, but to ensure that it is not unsafe. I am told that most of the works on the path itself are now complete. There may be one or two other things that we need to do on the side of the road, but I couldn't be absolutely sure as to when that will be finished.
Question number 611, the Honourable Elekem.
To the Speaker, since December 2011, can the government provide a weekly surplus with statistics relating to the amount of persons who have visited A, the most property, closely scanned, and seized in Michael State?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I'm able to provide this information only for the period since April 2015, since that is the date from which computerized records are available of this statistic. Manual compilation will take more resources than is reasonably practicable to apply to such an exercise. But, Mr. Speaker, we're working on getting as much as we can, and when we have had some additional years, then I will be providing that. But I haven't been able to do so because it would have been for a very short period. But this is something that we'll be taking on longer term, and I have no doubt that the Honourable Member will remind us if he doesn't receive it.
Question number 610, the Honourable Elephant. Thank you, pardon, 612.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide a schedule of the projected number of pupils in each class as at the start of each academic year since December to September 2012, stating A, the year the class relates to, B, the school the class belongs to, C, the number of children with special education needs, and D, the number of learning support assistants per class?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, I'm handing over the schedule to the Honourable Member
which contains information which is relevant to the question. However, as I mentioned to the Honourable Member in my reply to question 494, class sizes, issues related to special education needs, and indeed the consequent deployment of support are constantly changing. Classes shrink and grow, children move across sets, and rarely leave midway to attend complete core modules and events subdivided to complete topics of choice. The size needs today are different from tomorrow. Additional temporary help will be needed at different stages of a child's journey, and no stone is left unturned to ensure that this support is afforded every time. The schedule provided will give the Honourable Member a yearly snapshot of the students in each of the years in each of our schools. The total number of students with special educational needs in each school and the number of special needs learning support assistance deployed across our schools.
This is a lengthy schedule. We can come back to it if necessary. We move on to question 613.
Question number 613, the Honourable Alicia.
Mr. Speaker, could I just ask, relating to 612, the federal question, please, whether it is possible to get a breakdown per class rather than the year itself?
Very lengthy discussion last time. I suppose it is possible again to give a snapshot for class. Because I would very much appreciate, perhaps behind your chair, if I understood what information the Honourable Mrs. Ramos wants to extract. She wants to then throw something back at me, if she's in his perfect right to do so. But I'm not sure how it would assist. And before I ask the team once again, after, despite our discussion last time, they have to use this one to go back and divide all these into specific classes, which is again an onerous task. And I just don't understand the logic, but this is not for perhaps for now. I will go back and inquire, but I'm a little bit concerned, as we said last time, the number of resources we will have to put into this at a time when we're trying to do other things with our education, even though the Honourable Member clearly doesn't like the word revolution.
Question number 613, the Honourable Elegant.
The Speaker, can the government confirm that either from January 2012, it has carried out annual health and safety audits of each school in the process? If so, can it provide a report with the recommendations including A, recommendation resolved, and B, those which remain unresolved?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
The Speaker, the main health and safety audit for public school buildings was completed by the Health and Safety Officer for Technical Services in January 2013. Others have been carried out by the former administration. The recommendations have been met or are in the process of being met. Smaller scale reviews are carried out on an ongoing basis, and it is not government policy to publish these reports, which are of an internal technical nature. There was one large report, large is probably not the right word, but an intensive report in January 2013, and then subsequently on an ongoing basis, using that as a basis, there have been smaller scale assessments. They haven't been at the same level because there was a need to establish a baseline, and following on that, the smaller scale reviews based on how we had moved on from there. What hasn't been done is being carried out. I think that's the distinction I have to make between them.
And therefore, Mr. Speaker, if the more smaller surveys have been carried out, can the Minister confirm that these have been consistently applied equally through all the schools and they have been done at a more or less an annual basis?
Mr. Speaker, I'm not aware of the detail.
the head teachers will, in conjunction with the relevant offices in the Department of Education, review any health and safety issues that there may be in the different schools. Quite what the format of that is, I don't have all the details, but this is done on an ongoing basis since all of our schools are safe for students and staff alike.
May I, Mr. Speaker, refer to the seven minutes of the argument to try to question the following trend? On that schedule, Mr. Speaker, except for the year pertaining to 2017-2018, the academic year, that schedule at the very bottom of 2017-18 gives me figures for Gibraltar College. But in all the previous years, already the district schools, there are no statistics at all providing respective schedules in the college. It could be an error. Just outside the page when the printout was done, or the minister has not authorized it. Can I ask the minister if possible to search up information with respect to the college and provide either when you may need it?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, it appears that the table has been truncated at some stage. The one I originally saw digitally, I believe, included them all. It may be that at some stage in the preparation of the printing, the Gibraltar College has been left out, and I will endeavour to have an amended one very, very soon provided.
If I may, on the question of health and safety audits at the school, can I just ask the Minister to confirm that it is the case that in normal circumstances, matters of health and safety at schools and indeed in any building is the responsibility of the management, if you like, of that building. And therefore, we think health and safety issues would be dealt with by the management and would not, certainly not be a matter that the government is routinely have to become involved in, unless a matter of great importance or great cost were identified as being an issue.
Mr. Speaker, yes, it would be the head teacher in liaison with the department who would deal with routine health and safety matters on a daily basis. And these things, I'm grateful to the honourable member for having given me the opportunity to confirm this. These things would be dealt with on a daily basis of any, if there arises, if there is anything major which requires more extensive assessment or more allocation of funds, then it could be taken about at a different level. Absolutely.
Just in relation to the questions that have been asked in relation to education and the statistics that have been presented by the Minister, is the Minister aware, given the statistics that have been presented, what the optimum class size is for our schools?
My honourable friend and former teacher has assisted me in this. This is the figure that I have in my head. It's 20 for first schools, 25 for middle schools, and in secondary schools it will depend because clearly we're looking at different options in different scenarios, and we cannot have a hard and fast one. And that is the option that we certainly aim.
And I'm grateful for the answer. I appreciate that there will be a little give in relation to those numbers, plus or minus two, either way. But is the government satisfied, the minister satisfied, that we are not, that there's no description of those class sizes that would cause them to change?
Mr. Speaker, information that I have provided, because it is not divided into classes, is something that I cannot give the details. I haven't been asked for that information. What I can say is that the population of young people in the voting is increasing. If I may just, for example, give an example, when I became Minister for Health, the average birth rate is just about 400 and now closer to 500 consistently.
But clearly, the population of children in the world is increasing, which is something that we will absolutely assume in the new school, because we are building and looking towards the future. And we do everything we can in order to maintain these ratios. How successful we are and how many may have a slight oversubscription of, I am not able to say right now because I don't have those figures.
I appreciate the answer to that question. I think it was a question that was alluded to by my understanding of Yamak in relation to this question on the task guide. I think this question did ask about that, and I appreciate the difficulty in obtaining statistics on that. The reason why I ask this question is that many of us who have young children in schools, and many people that I speak to, parents speak to, about their concern about classroom sizes generally. I'm not saying there is a concern, but it's often a question is asked about classroom sizes. And that is why I asked whether the minister was satisfied with the present situation, given the increasing numbers of students, and particularly given, of course, the increasing complement as per the manifesto commitment of 69.
But the increasing in our population of children is something that, as I said before, we must recognize as a fact, and this is why we are doing major reforms to provide new and refurbished schools, which will take this completely into account in the next 2 years.
Question number 614, the Honourable Elephant.
Mr. Speaker, can the government provide details and software of education to make the school story in support of others after the 1st of September 2017 and when the instructions to make these modifications were given?
Answer the Honourable Minister for the Environment, Energy, Climate Change and Education.
Mr. Speaker, work to enclose the staircase were undertaken during the beginning of September. However, these modifications were commissioned as part of the modular installation and not after it was commissioned. And these include: one, the staircase enclosure with windows to allow natural lighting; two, a non-slip paint on staircase; three, air conditioning. The only works requested by the head teacher after the modular installation are two gates that have been placed at the top and bottom of the staircase, respectively. The cost of these modifications amounts to £12,773.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to ask the Minister why, when this issue blew up, especially in the public domain, did he not provide parents and the public at large with assurances that, you know, the main concern, not saying that I agree with the fourth account, but the main concern was the fact that the staircase was in the rain, the children are going to have to grow up, it would be dark in the early hours of the morning, and more than anything, the fact that obviously the staircase was in fact in the open air. Why the minister didn't interested to give these assurances at the time, rather than just defend the Force Academy of the University of Ireland this time?
Peter, I really don't understand the question. Why did I not? And Peter, what gives the honourable member the impression that he knows what I did or did not say to the parents when I met them?
Well, Mr. Speaker, but publicly, at least, I've not been in any meetings with you and the parents, but publicly, there's been no clarification on the fact that the Port of Paris had yet not been fully commissioned, even though it was being used, and that further modifications were away. And when I asked last month with regard to the cost, again, the minister didn't say that there was an additional expenditure pending in modifications which had to be undertaken, which had yet not been finalized.
Speaker, there's a long list of things that I have not said, because I have not said more things that I have said, because there are lots of things that I know about, that I do my day-to-day, that I don't issue press releases on, or that I don't do YouTube movies on, because I've actually got work to do. Speaker, the honourable member is the only person who made a public condemnation of this situation. And I was responding to the people who I answer to, which is the people of Gibraltar, the children and the parents of the school. I met with them, I had several meetings, I gave them my reassurances. I did not have to fall into the trap of just answering Mr. Zanna from Facebook or whatever.
fact that the meetings of the parents went well, they were given these reassurances, and that I have executed my duty in this respect absolutely.
Question number 615, the Honourable is MD Hassan Naomi.
Does government have any updates in connection with its answer?
I'm just conscious of the time, and I wonder whether that might be a friendly moment. I'm afraid to speak of it during the time. There are other commitments in this side of the house that we have to attend to. This side has. The speaker, I mean that the house is therefore now recessed to 2:30 in the afternoon.